Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast. Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast. This is Dr. Jay Calvert, and I am very excited to have back on for the second time to the Dr. Hockey Podcast, Dave Maloney. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well, Doc. Can't complain whatsoever. You know, as we were chatting a little bit before we officially logged on, it's, you know, these kind of odd circumstances continue, although we seem to be making some progress as far as the pandemic and different things that are going on. But all in all, knock on wood, you know, my family's all healthy, and the Rangers haven't missed a game at all. Don't seem to have. Greg McKay is the only one. I mean, Strome went through it earlier. He missed about a week to 10 days. And Mika Zibanejad had a bit of a scare. He had a false positive test. But beyond that, the Rangers, knock on wood, so far have been healthy and are playing well. So life is good.
Boy, the Rangers are playing very well. They they look like they've got something special going on this year.
Well, they do, but there's a lot of hockey left. I mean, it's a little bit like watching a. I don't watch much of the NBA. I watch college basketball, and you're amazed how teams can go on a run, and then you go, "What happened? They haven't had a point in the last, whatever." So I think every team, and I think it's, you know, you got to assume you're going to hit a bad patch, whether it's during a game or a stretch of time. It's just a matter of how long it lasts and where do you, when you get yourself upright, where do you stand? And the Rangers, Rangers' first 10 games, it was basically a Shesterkin-Durvin show. The second 10 game segment, Shesterkin still is an important player, but he doesn't have to be brilliant for 60 minutes a game. So, so they've been managed to put some points in the bank and have rolled along pretty nicely after 21 games.
Well, I mean, I got to say, I knew last year when I don't understand the coaching change, and maybe you can help me with that, of why that happened. I think Gallant's an amazing coach, but I don't think things were going so badly last year. And I thought the team was really kind of pulling, well, I guess I should say last season. But it was, it looked like, you know, there were some really great pieces falling into place. And some of the young guys are really playing at a different level, and Panarin's firing on all cylinders, and Zibanejad is, you know, the guy's a he's just a beast of a player. So, you know, here they are, and then they bring in Gallant to coach them, which I don't know, maybe like, you know, 6-1, half dozen the other on the coaching change. What was the driver behind that? Do you know? Do you have any details about why that happened?
Well, I think there are a number of mitigating circumstances. I did think that David Quinn was doing a great job, as well as John Davidson and Jeff Gorton. And but at the end of the day, the owner and has every right to see things the way he wants to see them. And he didn't like what he saw, or didn't like what he heard, and really he gets the rap. He gets the rap, Mr. Dolan does. But he really is, at the end of the day, he's a pretty good owner. I mean, he pays people. He basically leaves the hockey people alone until he decides that he's seen enough. And, you know, in normal circumstances, the team travels well. He's been asked to eat contracts. He's been asked to buy out people shortly after it looked like that they were the next ones. So I think in a lot of ways and again, you know, we all wonder, until I guess you own a club, you wonder why a guy thinks the way he thinks. But, you know, net, at the end of the day, if the owner decides he doesn't like what he's saying, there's probably going to be a change. And I think ultimately that was the story. And that was basically it. Like I said, I didn't think David was going to live to see the fruits of his efforts, you know, because it was going to be a while and inevitably – a change what was going to be made, but there was a pretty substantial change made before I think a lot of people thought it was time. But Gerard Gallant has come in with a refreshingly simple presence. He's He doesn't overcomplicate things. And sometimes, well, he doesn't tell you anything. He doesn't say much. And, you know, at the end of the day, lots of times, Doc, the Garden runs a clip of Emil Francis in the locker room in the early 60s. They were preparing to play the Chicago Blackhawks. And you know what? Emil Francis was talking about play hard, play honest, take the man off the puck. If you get a chance to shoot it, shoot it. And you know what? That's basically how the game still is, you know? And it's a pretty simple game. And I think a lot of times it's become a big, big business. And, you know, you get complicated by the jargon that's used, but Gerard Gallant has been refreshingly simple in his approach and it seems to be working.
Well, you know, and that's, I agree. It's like, it is the, it's a simple game. There's like not much to it. Put the puck in the net, you know, keep it away from the other team as long right. as you possibly can and, right. and do your job. So yeah, it's not, it, there's not rocket science in terms of, you know, the complexities of an NFL game. And, right. And I love that about hockey. And I think that's why, you know, people, you know, they go to a game live for the first time and they lose their minds and they're addicted for life because it's so right. fun to watch. Right. But yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the coaching, there is not, you know, you can make it as difficult or as easy as you want to, I'm sure. But I see from my standpoint, when I see some of these guys who do sort of outcoach the other side, when the teams are really evenly matched, it's really for these very, very minor, finer points mm-hmm. that all of a sudden you realize like they're matching up better. They're doing things to really neutralize. And I saw this the other night, for instance, the Montreal Canadiens neutralized the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Penguins beat them up pretty good the last time they'd played them. And they came in and they were interviewing, I forget who it was, but one of the guys from the coaching staff, and he said, look, you know, here's the bottom line. He goes, the Pittsburgh Penguins, in order for us to win, we need to neutralize their defense because their defense is part of their offense. And their defense moves and moves and moves. And if we can stop their defense moving, we can beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. And they did just that. And I saw that as a really key, you know, coaching point that, you know, they – you know, there wasn't much to it, but boy, like what a great analysis. And I hadn't realized it, that that's kind of been like the way the Penguins have won all along. Their defense is part of their offense all the time. And if you make that coaching suggestion to your guys and you say, look, this is our thing, all of a sudden you have a leg up on that other team. So I don't know. It's simple game on one level, but then sometimes.
Well, I think, when you start from the premise, somebody asked me at one point who the worst player was I ever played against. And I'm like, you know, I had never been asked that question. I never looked at it because everybody's in the league deserves to be in the league.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter. So when you start from the pretense that 98% of the guys in the league belong in the league. Yeah. And so then it's a matter of, okay, is your upper end a little deeper than the other team's upper? I remember Scotty Bowman, you know, talking about at the end of the day, if I have a deeper stable of horses, I'm probably over long term going to have a better chance. The game is innately, it's the one game where turnovers determine an awful lot. Like the puck turns over all the time. Like in football, you get three chances. You might have to punt and keep it going. Baseball, you're on defense, you're on offense. Basketball is a little closer to hockey, but the ball doesn't turn over as much as in hockey. Lacrosse, if you get the ball off the faceoff in lacrosse, you know, the better teams in lacrosse, the problem rarely does the ball turn over. So there's so many variables, let alone Lady Luck and things. But if you have a coach and there's certain strategies that you hope to implement, and there are nights where it works and there are nights that it doesn't. So there's no question a coach is an important part of the process. I think the made importance when you watch what became when the Rangers went to the finals in 2014, you know, we had an upfront look. So the longer you go, whether they are good teams or teams that are playing good, the Los Angeles Kings turned out to be a pretty good team. They won three cups, right? Sure. The Rangers were a team that played two cups. So the Rangers were a team that was playing good. And so I think there's so many distinctions, but at the end of the day, a winning coach, a winning team has a coach that gets the buttons aligned more nights than not. And you know, that's the difference in a lot of times. So I think there is a certain amount of strategy that you prepare. The kind of ABCs of the game are pretty simple, but it's getting everybody on board. And, you know, it's funny. I get a little bit of a chuckle when I hear somebody say, you know, remember I was on a NHL radio broadcast with Jeremy Roenick. And he, in a certain sense, we were talking about the Sharks before. He was talking about the Sharks had kind of mailed it in and had given up in the third period. I said, what do you mean gave up? I mean, how do you know they gave up? And he said, well, they just gave up. I said, well, they quit. And I said, well, you don't get to this league if, you know, you quit. There's some nights not working.
Right.
So I said to him, I said, do you ever play with somebody that quit? And I said, yeah. He said, yeah, I played with a goaltender in Philadelphia that quit. I said, well, how do you know he quit? He said, I could tell it in his eyes. I'm like, oh, really? So, that's how you tell somebody quit. So there are a lot of little things about sport and about the game and stuff that I think there are some nights it works, other nights it doesn't. That's why every night's an exciting matchup because you never know what you're getting.
Well, I'll tell you, it's working for the Rangers right now. They're a lot of fun to watch. You know, it's just they're getting so much good offense, and the D looks really solid. I mean, what do you think? Who elevated their game in your eyes? I mean, you're watching this team every minute of every day. Who elevated their game in a way that's surprising to you?
You know what I really think? I think it's just this young core is a year older. You know, Panarin's Panarin. Fox turned out to be Fox. That's probably the biggest, you know, in the 2 years, he's probably been the biggest, oh my God, moment because he just does, he does things.
He's great.
And I just think the younger guys are getting a year older and I don't even think they're hitting their stride yet. I just think, now listen, and listen, the goaltender's been no team. You need elite goaltending. I think you need elite goaltending over the course of the regular season to have a chance. If you don't get goaltending during the regular season, you have no chance because the league's history has been littered with goaltenders who've gotten hot in the playoffs and made a name in the playoffs and then come the regular season have kind of faded to dark. So yep. I just think – and the Rangers so this is my, I don't know, 16th or 16th season, I think, doing what I'm doing. And 13 of those, I watched Henrik Lundqvist. And so, you know, the Ranger teams of Tortorella, particularly the Tortorella years, they had – a lot of times they had no business being in the playoffs, but for Lundqvist. So I think to answer your query – I think Zibanejad continues to be Zibanejad, although he hasn't offensively hit his stride yet. Kreider's been really good. You've got 16 goals out of Chris Kreider. So there's lots of things that fall into place. But I think basically they're just the younger guys are just that much more experienced and getting better. So it's been fun to watch.
Oh, it's really fun. I mean, I think, you see that with the young guys, like you said, the Lafreniere's and Kako. Yeah, he looks great. I mean, they looked great to start out, but like you said, they've got a year under their belt and they're getting better and tougher and stronger and understanding where to be. But I think Chris Kreider is just like, he's really doing great. And I think he's leading. I don't know. I'm not in the locker room, but I just get the sense that Kreider really has stepped up as a leader in the team.
Yeah, well, he's the longest tenured Ranger, and the thing about he's been a nice homegrown story. So the Ranger franchise hasn't recent time had a lot of homegrown stories that the franchise has stuck with. You know, that they've drafted, developed. Mark Stahl. Mark Stahl was probably the last one, right? I mean, Hendrick.
Yeah.
I mean, Hendrick was. So I think a lot of times, I think you need to build a culture from within. And I do think they're on that track. If they can stay on track and keep Hedl, keep Lafreniere, keep Kako, keep Nils Lundqvist, keep these guys around for a while to allow them to mature, then you create the culture. Then you get to a certain point where if you need to add a piece or two, you know, look at the great Yankee teams. They were built from the middle up, all within. Cheater and Posada and guys like that. And so there's some good things going on. I the last couple of years I've been able to kind of observe and think that they're heading in the right direction and the best is yet to come. Well, they're heading quickly, you know, they're growing even more to that position, and it's really good. And I think there's an upside yet still.
I agree with you 100%. You know, it doesn't hurt having Trouba there. That's been that I think was a really powerful acquisition. And, you know, I'm very impressed though with the chemistry this year. It's fun to watch. You know, the Rangers are, you know, obviously the Garden is one of the, you know, the original home fronts for hockey. It's very exciting. It's good for the sport when the Rangers are doing well, I think. I think, you know, it kind of gets that Eastern division going, you know?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, the Metro is pretty competitive. And that patient, the fans have been really embracing this season. I mean, you know, given the season we had last year where nobody was in the building. And, I mean, it's been a very – they've been an entertaining team to watch. I think in the two 10-game segments we talked about, touched upon earlier, the first 10 games, they – you know, led by Shesterkin, there were a lot of fundamental stuff that wasn't working. Right. The second 10-game segment, they've tightened things up and they've been healthy. So, they've been good goaltending. They've been healthy. And you know, kids, when you're healthy, people get slotted in the right spot. Like, it was interesting to watch them last night when Dryden Hunt got tossed. So he seemed to be fitting in, you know, pretty well up with Strom and Panarin. So you take him out. Now you got to force somebody into that spot. Then Goudreau goes down. You got to force somebody else into the spot. And I don't think it was any surprise. It could have been 5-0 after the first period last night against the Flyers. Yeah. It really could have been. And then Hunt goes down. Goudreau gets hurt. Now you're just not the same team, you know, because you – everybody was slotted right when you're healthy. So a lot of things have made this record what it's been. It's been good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's going to be a fun year for them. Around the league, what are the other teams that are kind of coming up for you that you're excited to watch and you think are going to be tough? You know, especially the Metro Division is not easy. Yeah. Right now.
No, it hasn't. I mean, we haven't seen Carolina yet. Although, you know, you go back to the bubble year. And last season we saw them. No, we didn't see them last season. So the bubble year, you know, they quite handily put it to the Rangers, and they played in the bubble in the playoffs. But I'm excited to see how they match up against them. The Rangers were beat fairly convincingly by Calgary. Calgary at this, you know, I think what you have to do is you can't, if the playoffs were to start today. You like how the Rangers are playing. You know, if you're the Islanders, you don't want the playoffs to start today. you know, if you're Toronto, you'd like things to start today. But there's still 60 games to play. So between now and 60 games to spring. So the teams that have impressed me, Washington on the opening night, I was impressed with. And then Calgary, very, very impressed with Calgary. So I'll be curious to see. Rangers have San Jose and Chicago. Colorado comes in midweek next week. They're kind of struggling to find their way, but it'll be exciting to see how they match up against that electric team. So it'll be fun. It is fun to see the teams that we haven't seen in a couple of years. So and then you get your benchmark how you're playing against some of the top teams. So.
Well, you know, I have season tickets to watch the Ducks, and mm-hmm. I sit right by the face-off circle for the Ducks, and they this team is mm-hmm. you know, talking about young kids driving the train. The guys that they drafted between Trevor Zegras and Troy Terry. Troy Terry had a 16-game scoring streak going, you know, right next to Connor McDavid. And, you know, they played up to the Golden Knights last night and beat them 6-5. I mean, they had a hard time in Colorado. But I think that, you know, once these kids get, you know, they start to become less kids and start to become more of, you know, the professional hockey players that they are, they can make some things happen. Like the promise of their skill in the juniors really starts to shine. And I think this about once a game, Trevor Zegras does something that I was like, oh my God, I don't even know how he pulled that off.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. And you know, their speed is impressive. I see it's the same thing with Lafreniere and Kako on the Rangers. Some of these guys, you know, obviously, you know, you see like a Cale Makar, who's now totally matured into like an incredible defenseman. Mm-hmm. It's impressive. I think once they get into the machine of these, you know, real physiological optimization situations called the NHL training locker room, mm-hmm. these kids go to a different level and they become real, they're racehorses, and it's a very impressive.
Yeah. Well, that's what you hope, right? I mean, yes. It's a little bit. So what happens is the kids will come up and show, you know, show like Zegras is a good example. He sure looks like a kid, but he is so early in his career. You know, the league will sniff him out sooner than later. And then, you know, then that second and third year, it's funny when the young kids come up, they haven't got a clue of really what it takes, but that works to their advantage because it's all innocent. And, right. And then you get a taste of it. I'll never forget, Michael Delzato had 44 points his rookie season with the Rangers. And wow. I remember talking to him at training camp his sophomore season. And, oh, my God, now he wanted to run the power play. He's going to be playing 25 minutes a night. He was going to be doing this. He wanted to do this. You know, you're like, I wouldn't say anything to him, but I'm thinking in the back of my mind, whoa, cowboy, whoa. I think that the benchmark is a couple hundred games. It's 175 to 210, somewhere in there. That gets you 2.5 to 3 seasons. Right. When you get a guy into his career, then you can start talking about, okay, now is this guy, does he look like, and I think it's unfair to compare anybody to, whether it's Orr or Gretzky or Lemieux or Connor McDavid, Ovechkin, because those guys are special. If everybody was that good, there'd be nobody that good because they'd right. all be the same. So I think for the young guys, there's every reason to be excited about the future. But I think you really have to, okay, it looks good. You've got every reason to expect things. But till we get a couple hundred games under the belt, I think that's the real benchmark then. And by that time, then you can figure out, okay, this guy's really this elite, or you know, he's going to be a good player, or he's going to be a role player, or whatever. But it's fun. It's fun to watch them grow.
Oh yeah, I mean for sure. I mean, I think it's you know, because I as a doctor, I watch things very differently in terms of their conditioning, in terms of their ability to take the amount of, you know, punishment they take on the ice is really significant. Mm-hmm. And it does have an effect over time. And the guys who are able to avoid that, like Gretzky was very good at avoiding, you know, taking bodily punishment. And I think that was a huge part of his success, is that he really avoided it. He was great at it, whether he was protected or whether he himself knew how to get away from everybody. That I don't really know. I'd love to ask him about it. But I am very aware of how much of a beating some of these guys take. And that is not going to help you have longevity in this league.
No, not to, and again, there lots of times they're coming in, and it is the one sport that, by and large, you know, you get your first stab as an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old, and there's a big difference between an 18-year-old, as you would know, physiologically and physically, than a 22-year-old. Yep. You know, and just the maturation. Like I think things that people forget about Fox, even he's 21 when he came in, 22. You know, he's not 18, and he's just it's different, and you can tell by a guy just by looking at a kid when it comes in. You know, lots of times I've done draft night shows or for the network where you interview the kids, and oh my goodness, it looks like they should be coming with a lunch bucket and a coloring book. And you're going to be against, you know, Zach Cassian or Ryan Reeves or so it, but I don't want that. I don't want it, because part of the journey is the excitement to watch the development. Yeah. So I don't want to be a naysayer and say, well, but I do think it's healthy to keep in the back of one's mind when you're observing that a career is not made in a month. You know,
no,
and there's no questions. Anaheim's been a great story, but we've seen now some of the early stories out of the gates. You also too. It's funny. You never wanted to play a team that nobody thought was going to make the playoffs early. You always want to get them late. You always want to get the teams that ran late the season before. You want to get them on your calendar early. You don't want to get the wily veteran teams late. You want to get them early. You want to get the young teams. You want to get them late on the schedule. So
totally.
But anyways, I actually listened to the Doc Vegas game on my drive home last night. I caught the first period of the radio. So, but it's fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Those stories that kind of drop from the sky are fun, aren't they? That's good.
Yeah, it is. And it's cool. I mean, I thought, you know, my wife and I were sitting there like looking at our season tickets. We went to the like pick your seat day, and like shockingly, some people had given up their seats on the glass. And so we were like, we got to take these, you know, forget it. We're doing it. You know, it's like we'll never get rid of these. Our kids will turn them over to their kids. Like it's fun to watch the game from the glass. I'm a big fan of that. And, and so we get there and like, well, maybe we're buying these tickets at the wrong end. Maybe we should be down the other end of the ice for the next two or three seasons. Because I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of scoring going on. And like quite the opposite. I mean, the Ducks have really stepped it up. I don't know that they're for real. Like that's sort of the question. Well, are the Ducks for real? Is Anaheim for real? Are they really going to be a playoff team? I don't know. You know, they need – I kind of – look at them and I see production from their young guys, but I look at guys that have been on that team for a long time, like Jakob Silverberg and Rickard Rakell and Adam Henrique. And I see them sort of like a half step behind a little bit compared to these young guys. And if, for them to go to the playoffs, those guys who've been in the league now for a while, the veteran guys who are, you know, in their late 20s and early 30s, they're going to have to jump their game to a new level, because come the next, you know, after the midseason, the play is going to go to a different level, and they'll get trounced by the teams that are really, really playoff bound.
Well, the thing too is, I think, you know, again, with a developing story, I the Rangers are still a developing story. They have no right to think they have anything, you know, because they really haven't earned it. They haven't earned the right to think that they're a playoff team. I've come to kind of conclude that long-term observations should be left for the long term. I think you should take every game as it happened, as whatever the result, how does your team play? Did they have a chance, win or lose? And then long-term, whether that's the springtime, the playoffs, or if we're, and just enjoy the journey while it lasts, rather than while they're going to make their playoff team. Like, and I think a lot of times we're chatting now, you know, in a medium that that people observe, and there's a lot more conversation about sport, and everyone has an opinion, and everyone there's a lot less patience about a story. There's a lot, you know, what are they going to do today? We got to win today.
True.
You know?
And yeah, you're right.
A lot of times it's like, it really is. It's particularly in developing stories, and where all of a sudden you get a taste, and now you're the playoff guy. Whoa, 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 whoa. You know, we just wait. Let's just, okay, last night we beat Vegas 6-5. Bit of a shootout. It's great. There was something here that maybe you can look at. Or, well, you know, we'll take the 6-5 win and worry about, the playoffs will be in May this year. We'll worry about May when May comes, and for there to be great. And I still, honestly, I have that thought still about the Rangers. I do think they're going to hit. They will hit. There'll be injuries. The crucial injury that can't happen is the goaltender.
No.
Yeah, the goaltender. Yeah.
Shesterkin's out of his head.
Right, and he the thing with him is, was he going? He still has only played. He's only played 65 NHL games. So you know. So I think, and that's the thing that there's still not a concern or an observation, but when you look at Henrik's career, that guy never missed a game. He got hurt once. You know, and, you know,
that's amazing.
He was a freak. He was an outlier, an absolute outlier. Now, it looks like skill-wise, Shesterkin has the same thing. Actually, Steve Ballaquette told me this yesterday. Steve backed up Henrik for 4 years under Tortorella. And he told me that one time in his last season, Tortorella came to him and said, you're going to play in every back-to-back situation where we think we have a less chance of winning, you're going to play.
Wow.
Because we're not going to bury Hank.
Right.
Now, Steve was at an age, like now we could laugh about it, right? When you're out of the game for 15 years and you're a little bit older, but you're at a stage where you're 25, 26, 27. And he took that as kind of, well, you know, what are you telling me? I'm no good. I can't play. Which wasn't the case. What Torch told him was, this is going to be your role because the other guy is the guy that's going to carry us. So I just think that the thing for Igor still is he's going to need, Shesterkin hasn't been very good. And Georgiev hasn't been very good. They're going to need Georgiev to be better because you cannot expect Shesterkin to do what he's doing over the course of 82 games. You can't. So,
yeah. I see that. You know, Shesterkin is he's really exciting to watch. He's a great goaltender. His sense of the game is beyond his years. Obviously, I mean, it's impressive. And I had higher hopes, quite honestly, for Georgiev. I thought he was going to be a better goaltender. Then he's having a harder time, obviously, but. I don't know what happened.
Well, what happened to him, I think you could make it here because his numbers. So Shesterkin came in January of 2020, mid-January. They had three goaltenders. And Henrik wasn't going to be the guy. And in practice, there's only two nets. So the guy that got the silent squeeze in a lot of situations was Georgiev. And if you look, his numbers have rolled over significantly since that COVID shortened season. And then last year, I've gotten progressively worse. And I just think that he now again, the goaltending position is tough because the coach's job is on the line basically every night. He wants to put the best guy in there. It's getting him the best chance to win.
That's right.
And now Shesterkin is at a stage where I think he thinks he has to validate his career every start he gets. And, you know, that's a dog chasing tail. You know, where do you sign off and where do you go? So, Georgiev needs to be better. He does need to be better. He hasn't been good enough because Shesterkin has only played 65 games in his career. But again, those are the things that you just kind of in the back of your mind. Lots of times people will ask me, what do you think? I said, well, okay, this is what I think. I always tell them come playoff time, please go as long as you can because I get paid bonus money in playoffs.
That's right.
The realities you have to look at. And so, but it's exciting. It's still an exciting story.
Well, I don't want to keep you all night, but I do want to go through quickly. Who do you think are the Stanley Cup contenders this year? Give me your top four. And obviously, if we know it's going to change based on all the things that we've talked about.
If it started today, I've been really impressed with Toronto.
Yeah.
They have become a team now. The Rangers lost 2-1 to them 2 weeks ago, and stole a game in Toronto in the first 10-game segment, lost them 2-1. And Toronto is a lot better defensive team. Now, they're, so if that started today, I really like Toronto. Calgary, really like Calgary also. So I would say Toronto, Calgary, Carolina. I think Carolina of those, they've been there. They've been to the dance a couple of times. They've had, you know, they've been through a round of playoffs. That's the thing with Toronto. Toronto hasn't won a playoff series in quite some time. Calgary is a veteran coach. So the fourth team, if it started today, I haven't seen St. Louis. We played Nashville. You know, I might throw Edmonton in the mix.
I was wondering if you'd say
Washington,
that.
Edmonton, Washington.
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably missing somebody fairly obvious, but probably Edmonton.
I agree with you. I think I would pick, in my estimation right now, if I had to say who's winning the Stanley Cup, the way Toronto's playing, forget it. They've got that blue line has been shored up. Their defense is a lot better. Their goaltending. I thought Freddie Anderson's a great goaltender. You know, he's kind of killing it over in Carolina right now.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know that was their problem, but boy, they sure are getting production out of all three of their major lines, and I'm sure their fourth line will do some damage too, but that's a big deal. I think Edmonton, they have so much firepower. I don't know that they're going to win a Stanley Cup just yet, but they certainly have everything there. I thought that I was going to see a better year from the Avalanche, and I'm not counting them out just yet.
Yeah,
I still think
that's the team I forgot. Right. That's the team.
I mean, I don't see how Nathan MacKinnon can't lead a team to the Stanley Cup, but it's the same thing with Connor McDavid. You know, it's like, how is that not happening?
They will. I mean, you know, McDavid's what, 24, MacKinnon's still only 26. They'll have their moment. The thing with Colorado is their goaltending, and they've had COVID and they've had injuries, and that lineup healthy is a scary lineup. You know, Vegas, I think they tinkered a little too much with what they had going there. But it'll be fun. You know, we should revisit later in the spring and remember this conversation, and then we'll go from there.
I'd love to. It's great. I'm gonna come out for a Ranger game too. I think in March. So I'll
good. Yeah, you know, please look me up.
I will. One of my buddies got the gig with MSG Networks. A guy named Scott Pacman. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Scott, but he's in the inner workings of the MSG Networks, and he's a good buddy of mine. So
good. Yeah. Well, please, if you come this way, it'd be like nice to meet face to face, and
sure.
Yeah, it'd be really good stuff. So that's a deal. But we will revisit our conversation about the four teams and see
where we are.
See where we are. It's been great. Thanks.
Well, all right, Dave. I really appreciate you jumping on tonight. Thanks again.
All right. My pleasure. Stay in touch.
Right. See you later.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Hockey. Check out new episodes every Thursday and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.